now that your picture's in the paper being perfectly admired, and you can have it a one that you have ever desired. All you gotta tell me now is why.
Back on Downtown on a Wednesday afternoon, and time for this week's Sports Lit 101 with Bruce Pratt here in studio with us. Welcome, welcome, sir.
Good to be here, sir. We're going to talk a little bit about soccer today, which I admit is not something that I know an awful lot about, but I've been doing a lot of reading on a couple of subjects. And yesterday in The Good, Bad, and Ugly, you mentioned that FIFA had awarded Saudi Arabia the World Cup, which, and that's bad enough. But then I thought, one of the things is not just the corruption in FIFA, but the hypocrisy. Now, according to the New York Times of yesterday, okay, this just happened, FIFA suspends Rubiales for 3 years for forced kiss. Now, this was the head of the Spanish Soccer Federation who kissed a woman against her will by her accounts and by people standing nearby. He denies it, says it was a consensual peck and it wasn't a big deal. Okay, they're suspending him for 3 years, and they're awarding Saudi Arabia, the bonesaw people, the FIFA World Cup. If anybody doesn't think they are the most corrupt sports organization running, and that means you got to top the IOC.
Right. I mean, the bar is pretty high.
It's absolutely unbelievable. And I don't know what happened. I didn't see the kiss. If the woman said that it was not consensual and there were people there that said it was not consensual, I believe what she's saying. It wasn't like a he said, she said. There were other people that witnessed this. Everybody who's seen it goes, oh, come on. It's what that's worth a three-year suspension. But you give a multi-billion-dollar enterprise to the Saudis. Now, what made me think about that was not just what you mentioned yesterday, but I have been reading on Sunday an article that's saying nothing, saying something. It has to do with the British football, England's Football Association. And when I was reading this, I was remembering a conversation I had with two retired military people who said that they're getting very tired of what they called bumper sticker patriotism, that everybody will come up and say, thank you for your service, or I support the troops. But when it comes time to asking those people, would they pay another $300 a year in their taxes so that the health care that we promised veterans would be available for their lives, could that we could meet that? Oh, no, that's not the problem. You got to cut government. It's so easy, right? We see all these posturing idiots that have all their Second Amendment ideas and the like which anybody that's read the amendment know they don't know what the hell they're talking about. You know, if you're so brave, go join the Army, go join the Marines, go join the Navy, put yourself in harm's way if you think you're such a hero, right? We've got a generation of people who think that acting tough is being tough, and it isn't. Well, this is what happened in England, and I found this fascinating. Last weekend, the English Football Association, and this is from the Times by Rory Smith, who's their international soccer writer, I should have given him credit, had done the best it could after hours and hours of talks. It had settled on what might be best described as the least worst option. On October 13th, England's men's team was playing an exhibition match against Australia. Most expected the game would take note of the violence crackling across Israel and Gaza, commemorate the victims, and acknowledge the suffering. Executives at the Football Association knew they would have to tread carefully. They had weighed the risk that a minute's silence, soccer's traditional manifestation of grief, might be interrupted, but they determined that having it was the appropriate thing to do. There would be black armbands, and to ward off the chance that Israeli or Palestinian flags might appear in the crowd, they declared that all banners except for those of the competing teams would be forbidden. The most difficult decision, though, concerned the Wembley Arch, the steel beam that soars above the stadium. If you just look up the Wembley Arch, or you've ever seen concerts or things or games, or this giant steel arch, it has become the way in which English soccer expresses its opinions. It was illuminated in the French tricolor in 2015 to show solidarity after the Paris attacks, and Ukraine's yellow and blue after the Russian invasion. It's been used to mark the death of Pele, to demonstrate admiration for Britain's National Health Service, and to show support for the LGBTQ Pride campaign. John Mann, the British government's anti-Semitism czar, assumed the FA would do the same for Israel. But aware of the political sensitivity, he suggested that the blue and white of the Jewish prayer shawl, rather than an Israeli flag, might act as a compromise. Well, then it went off the rails. And one of the things that this article brings up, and I think it's something that we should think about, there should be a public discussion of this, is how much is a sporting event bigger than a sporting event? You know, I understand the urge to recognize people, to recognize things that have happened. But, you know, it's a little bit like using the F word. If you use it over and over and over and over again, people become inured to it. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't have any sting anymore. And if every time there's a moment of silence for something, then it equates a terrible tragedy like what happened last week in Lewiston with the passing of a great athlete. They're not the same thing. If the great athlete was 87 years old, I think that's what Frank Thomas was, I was sad that he died. He was a guy I loved to watch hit home runs, even if they were usually against the Yankees and they were bombs that went out in center field at Yankee Stadium. But he was 87 years old. He lived a long life, and it's right to recognize it. But if every ballpark in America and every hockey rink and every basketball arena decides at that moment, oh, we better have a moment of silence for that, it cheapens the moment of silence. And I can see where the Football Association in England was caught between a real rock and a hard place. And I remember a number of years ago when there was a terrible mass shooting in New Brunswick, and every hockey arena in the U.S., regardless of who was playing, high school, college, and pros, were asked to have someone sing the Canadian National Anthem. And they asked me, because I'm one of the people at Maine that knows both the full English and full French versions, and they said, would you sing the bilingual version of it? And I said, sure. And I thought about it later, and I thought, yeah, because there were Canadians there, right? It might have meant something to the Canadian kids. But had it happened in Australia, would we have sung the Australian national anthem at every game? No. And sometimes it's just a little bit too much of a oh, look at how good I am kind of statement to do some of these things. So I urge people to think about this. I'm not telling anybody how to think, and if I knew the answer, I'd tell you. I don't. But I think we need to look at how we do grief, as they would say, in public in this country. And I think that sometimes grief is a very private thing and might best be left there.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I'm with you on that. I don't know the right answer. And I'm not sure there is an answer that's right for everybody.
Yeah.
But there's our nature as, maybe as human beings, but certainly as Americans, a lot of people feel the need to establish a connection to that public grief,
right?
Even if there was no connection.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the people that will, you know, put 1,000 teddy bears at the scene of a car accident that didn't know anybody. There are plenty of places you could donate teddy bears to make living little children very happy, you know, and I don't want to sound callous and I don't want to sound uncaring, but I sometimes think that it's like when I got really angry with Dunkin' Donuts or whoever it was that said, if you buy this certain drink on this given day, we'll donate 15% of the proceeds to the Wounded Warrior Fund. No, if for the day you will donate 15% to the Wounded Warrior Fund, no matter what I buy, that's a donation.
Right, right.
The other is using a pumpkin latte spice whatever as a promotional item.
Yeah.
And there's just something wrong about that, and I feel in the bottom of my soul. So reading about this, and I hadn't thought about how for professional sports it can be an issue.
Yeah, it's a very interesting topic. Thank you, Bruce. Hey, it's 4:44. We'll take a little break. Bruce not going anywhere. When we come back, his conversation with Maine hockey coach Ben Barr next.